Welcome everyone to episode 140 of Bike Club Show. This is Eileen.
This is Stephanie.
This is Shannon.
And we are back finally. We've got a backload of episodes to talk about with The Vampire Diaries, Walking Dead, and Being Human. We're going to do our best to kind of go over all the episodes, which we've mostly all watched. It's just a matter of we haven't been able to record. But before we start all that, this is Bike Club Show, where each week we sink our teeth into your favorite fantastic shows. You can find us bikeclubshow.com. Email us bikeclubshow@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at bikeclubshow. And of course on Facebook, facebook.com/bikeclubshow. We start each and every week with a wine selection of the week. Stephanie, I've had this one.
Oh, I know. Okay, so we're recording at 11 a.m. on a Saturday. And, you know, I had some wine last night. It's this something I've talked about before, the Ménage à Trois wine. This is my standard wine, but I'm just finishing up a bottle from last night. Hey, you know,
hey.
Why not?
It is the weekend.
Yeah, I'm not going to rate it because you guys all know I love it. But okay. What are you guys drinking?
I have some coffee because I just woke up and I'm...
It's a little bit more appropriate, yep.
Got my sweet tea.
All right, well, we're kicking in high gear. So let's just go ahead and jump into The Walking Dead Season 3. We are sort of behind. We've not recapped the last four episodes, so I think we're just going to kind of catch up on the last two, because everything else will fall into place. But I think Shannon hasn't seen the last one, so we're going to start with episode 13, Arrow on the Doorpost. And this is the episode where Rick and the governor met, and it was really tense, right, guys?
Yes, yeah, it was really stressful.
I think this was actually the governor and Rick's very first scene together. Like, I was doing an article where they've actually not worked. They haven't worked together at all, like, the whole season. So
the dogs hate the governor.
Yeah, sorry about that. One sec.
Yeah.
So I think one of my favorite parts about this this episode was just seeing how the governor and Rick interacted with each other. Wasn't that interesting to you?
Yeah, it was super tense, especially knowing in the back of my mind that they had not rehearsed this before. And they kind of made the scene better for me. Yeah, I read about the article before I saw the episode. I read about the episode before I saw it. And yeah, like, so all of the emotions and reactions that they had together were like dead on, like, for reals. Like, so I was really impressed. I thought that the governor was super creepy, especially, you know, it's hard because, like, obviously they don't trust each other. I thought that for sure someone was going to attack someone.
Yeah, I kind of believe that too. And I was kind of surprised that, you know, when everybody was hanging out outside, all of their, I guess you could call them bodyguards from each of the different posts, I was kind of surprised that none of the bodyguards actually attacked each other. Especially when it came down to, what was his name? Merle.
Uh-huh.
When Merle was out there discussing with one of the guys from Woodbury, I forget what they were discussing, but they got into
Daryl.
Daryl, because Daryl was out there.
Cigarette.
I think Merle. Okay, yeah, because Merle was really upset at the prison and wanted to go and save his brother. Remember that?
Yeah.
Mad at Glenn for keeping him put.
Yeah,
in the prison. But yeah, no, Shannon, you're right. Like, Daryl and one of the Woodbury guys, they were sharing a cigarette, saying, you know, like, oh, it's cool. You know, it's cool now, but they're going to make us fight each other, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, they were, you know, just being cool with each other. And then even Herschel and the other Woodbury guy were sharing a laugh.
Like,
yeah, it was interesting.
It's was the doctor.
Yeah,
and this is the point where I feel like we start to see the doctor turn. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, wait a minute. These people aren't so bad, you know, and he's starting to kind of like put things together. God, it takes these people forever to figure out that the governor's horrible.
And the doctor's not a bad guy. The doctor has never been a bad guy. He's just he's just fallen into place in Woodbury and he doesn't know what else to trust out there.
Yeah, because
I don't blame him, but. Now he's meeting these people from the prison and he's starting to understand that, you know, maybe the governor is wrong. Maybe he has been lying to everybody. And I'm glad that people are starting to understand that now. It took him long enough. God.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting with Milton because as we see him, you know, change his mindset on the governor, it's kind of like he has this great conversation with Andrea, and I forget whether it's in episode 13 or 14, but she's kind of like, hey, you know, you should come to the prison with us, like, they're good people. And he's like, I'm not one of them, they wouldn't accept me.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, well, you know, no matter what good or bad the governor's doing, Woodbury is his home. And I can get that, you know, kind of like how maybe Andrea thinks that, you know, where the prison is mean with those people, that's her home.
That's her home, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a, I think there's a real sense of like what people consider home that's driving them to pick a side.
Yeah.
And that discussion at the very end, sort of the stalemate, you know, what the governor really wanted and what he would do. You know, I kind of, as soon as he said, well, I just want Michonne and then all your people live.
Yeah, right.
And as soon as Rick returned to the prison and had that conversation with everyone, I just like, I was so happy that he like, of course, he's smart enough to know that the governor would still kill them. But then at the end, he had that conversation with Herschel, mm-hmm. and he was still kind of double-guessing himself. And I'm like, oh, Rick, don't double-guess, double-think. But, I mean, anyone in that sort of situation would probably kind of, like, want to think of, like, well, what if the governor is being truthful, you know? Yeah. Try to give a benefit of the doubt, even though he knows for sure when he said, we're going to war, you know? Yeah. And Herschel's like, well, why'd you say that to them? And he's like, well, they need to be scared, you know? Mm-hmm.
I feel like Rick is in a tough place because there is no right strategy. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what, like, people are going to die.
It's true.
And so I think he's doing is, I think that Herschel was a great person for Rick to talk to because he is the only father
mm-hmm.
in the crowd. Like, he posed the question, would you give up your two daughters' lives for Michonne? Because he would have to give up Carl and his baby.
Yep.
Ugh.
It was a fair conversation, I thought.
Yeah, I do too. And, I don't know. I mean, this whole, the dynamics between Rick and the governor really showed. And, you know, Andrea, I just, in this episode, it's like, she's finally waking up, but I don't know. She still didn't do herself any favors by like leaving.
She really didn't. So, back in episode 11, when she did end up going back to the prison, cause she wanted to see her, you know, old school mm-hmm. friends,
warn them,
and then
right?
Carol told her to go back and hey, sleep with the governor, make sure, kill him while he's still asleep.
I know. And then she didn't do it, right?
She didn't do it. Yeah,
with them. She did it.
But It was her idea to get Rick and the governor together and have them meet and maybe come to some kind of agreement together. And even though it was her idea, it really disturbed me that during episode 13, they basically just kicked her out of the room and said, this is a man's conversation. Yeah. You're not a part of this.
Yeah, that was pretty, I felt bad for her because it's like, she felt powerless.
I guess.
It's like, it kind of unraveled into a situation that was no longer under her control.
And just one point on episode 12, because this all kind of ties into Michonne and how everybody didn't trust her, and now should we trust her? We're moving fast through all these episodes. But in episode 12, we really, you know, I think Rick finally started to trust Michonne because it was Michonne, Rick, and Carl going back to their hometown to get more guns and ammo. Remember, they run into the guy from episode 1 and 2?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Again.
Then he lost his son, and he's gone crazy by himself. That was really... I don't know. I really love that episode. And then in the end, Carl wanted that one photo of his family in that cafe. And he dropped it at one point when Michonne was helping him get it. And then Michonne somehow goes back into that crazy zombie room, I guess because they were all smelling Carl in front of the door, mm-hmm. and grabbed the photo and brought it out to him.
She got a funny cat.
And she did. She got the funny cat. And I think...
That was so cute.
That was a real turning point for Rick and Carl, like, to understand that Michonne is not a bad person. You know, she's
It really humanized her.
It really did. And so... You know, now we're talking about, you know, Rick giving up Michonne. There's a real conflict in here. It's not like he doesn't know her now. It's not like he doesn't have a little bit of trust with her now.
There was a line that Carl said, you know, she's one of us now.
Yeah, I really love that episode. I'm looking back at the notes, I'm like, oh, that was one of my favorite because it was just the three of them. It was very intense with the guy who's gone mad. And who didn't remember Rick, and then he had the the walkie from way back in season one that he gave him. And he's like, I checked and I waited and I listened for you, you know, to every day at whatever time. And Rick was like, he had his own, I mean, God, and we know what's happened to Rick and what's been going on. So, you know, I guess, Morgan, that's his name.
Yeah.
Just, you know, felt like abandoned, and it didn't matter if he knew. It didn't matter if he knew Rick. He was like, you left, and like, we never heard from you again.
Yeah, so. It was interesting to see how much compassion Rick had. I think there was a sense of guilt because he knew that he had abandoned his friend, and then he had lost his son. But you know, in the end, they worked it out. I mean, Morgan was in no condition to rejoin a community, but you know, he gave him all the guns. They wished each other well. Morgan even said something, you know, to Carl saying, you know, don't ever apologize for defending yourself.
Yeah.
So that it was quite nice. But, you know, I thought it was pretty darn cool seeing Morgan's setup. He had all these like little sticks to catch the zombie.
And
like,
booby traps.
Yeah, I know. I was like, and every day he would clear the grounds. Like, he'd just pick them up and burn the bodies.
Yeah. Every crazy. Day. Oh, God. And he's all by himself. I mean, that's just enough to go mad.
Yep. But, you know, now Rick and the team have tons of ammo and guns for the crowd, because I know they went there to stack up for war.
Exactly. So should we just quickly, Shannon, do you want to know anything about episode 14?
You guys go right ahead.
Okay.
All right.
I'm prepared.
Well, this episode really focuses on Andrea and the governor solely, and how Andrea, it pretty much finally changes her mind. Oh my God, it took her too long, I just think, to run away. But anyway, so the governor is, what would you call that shop, Stephanie? Like this, like, scientist or this like doctor area?
Wait, where are the,
you know, with the chair, the chair, and then he had all these
torture,
like,
torture chamber. He built freaking torture chamber.
Thank you.
And then we can assume that it's from Michonne.
Yes. And he's got a chair ready, he's got all his like tools and things ready. I feel like he's going to like take out an eye or I don't know what he's gonna do.
Probably the eye to begin with. But it just, you know, he looks, he starts whistling, or I don't know what.
He's got some weird whistle song. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's related to his daughter. I don't know.
Super evil. But you know, Andrea and Milton are actually up in the vents.
And can see this happening, and it's creepy. And she's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And they finally come to the discussion of, like, he is not a good man. We have to get out of there. And I think Milton's like, you know, you gotta go, or, you know, they have this conversation that basically Andrea decides she's going to make a run for it and go back to the prison.
I mean, she also at this point says that she admits that her plan is to kill the governor. She tells Milton this, and actually she points a gun through the vents down at the torture chamber.
And she doesn't do anything again.
No, well, she was going to, but Milton stopped her.
Yeah, that's true.
He stopped her, and I was, it made me cringe, because throughout this whole episode, I would keep thinking about that first episode in the beginning where I had the chance to take him out and Milton stopped her.
I know.
But, you know, we would not have the story, which is turned out to be pretty great.
Right. In the end, she they all leave that room, or she leaves the vent area, and she starts walking. And one of the guards, I can't remember his name, is like, hey, Andrea, we need your gun. She's like, what? She's like, I'm a good shot, whatever. And eventually she just gives him the gun. And then she runs in the governor, and he's like, oh, yeah, sorry, I should have told you about this. You know, we're going to war, blah, blah, blah.
He says some BS, like, oh, I want to just protect you.
Yeah, such BS. Yeah, he doesn't care about her at all. And then she just keeps going and ends up with oh, God, what is their names? They used to be in the prison.
Yeah.
The
newest members of Woodbury who fled the prison because Rick kicked them out.
I know.
And I don't remember their names either. They don't really make a point of
Tyrese? Is it Tyrese? I forget.
I'm not sure. But I think the listeners would know who we were talking about.
Yeah. Anyway, it's him and the other woman from the camp. And they, Andrea goes over there to talk to them and says, you know, give me, you know, let me by. She was just kind of trying to lie about.
Yeah, she's trying to get them away from the wall so that she can just walk out.
Yeah. And then they're like, no, why do you need, oh, Tyrese, it's Tyrese and Sasha. And, she basically tells him before jumping over the wall that the governor is not what he seems to be. She was just warning them. And they're like, what? And then she just runs. She's got a knife and she's running back to the prison. Yep. And I'm like, how in the world is she going to get back there? And, oh, God. And then Tyrese and Sasha pretty much tell the governor what happened and his crew. And then the governor just goes off and drives away and tries to find her. I'm like, because he knows where she's going.
You know, I wasn't okay. So eventually, we see a bunch of scenes where Andrea's just running. She's mm-hmm. tired, and you think I thought that she was running to the prison.
You don't think she was?
No, I do. I thought that she was running to the prison, okay. like to go to her other home.
Yeah,
but she runs into the warehouse.
But do you think she ran into the warehouse because that's when she saw the governor? Like the warehouse was probably on the way to the prison, but she, you know, there was that she. Remember, then the truck came, and then true. She ran into the warehouse.
Okay, yeah, it was unclear where she was trying to go, because I was like, why didn't she just go to the prison? But, you know, I guess she was...
She needed running. To run, because he mm-hmm. had a truck, he had, like, a huge truck and guns, and she's got a knife, and she was... I think when she was, like, out in the open, then the truck saw her, and I thought that was pretty stupid to be out in the open. I know that in the woods, it's tough, because there might be some zombies in there, but being out in the open, of course... The governor was going to spot her. She's the only one out there. And she, like, falls to the ground in this open field. And then all of a sudden, she thought she was in the clear. And then the truck turns around and starts gunning to her. And it's like, oh, crap. And so she happens to be close to the warehouse. There's some, like, kind of like, oh, wow, just lucky her. There's a warehouse there. or like, oh, wow, there's an open field. And, of course, the truck found her right at that point. Yeah. I'm like, ugh. There's a couple of weird things, but when she gets into the warehouse is where it gets
kind of insane. Gets magical. Like I just love this scene.
You want to describe it? Go for it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, well, obviously it's a game of cat and mouse at this point. Andrea is in a dark, abandoned, dirty warehouse. Kind of looks like it used to be maybe a little industrial, but in any case, she's just finding a place to hide, but where can she really go? The governor shows up. You see his silhouette through the broken glass doors, and he comes in, and it's great because it's not like he's trying to be quiet. He is intimidating her. He is making himself known that he is hunting her. He drags this shovel along the ground. He makes noise against the chain-linked fences. He breaks all of the glass so that when anyone steps, you can hear the footsteps. Like, he is intimidating her like crazy. But what's interesting is that they don't have just each other to fight. There are hella walkers. Mm-hmm. So many walkers all over the place. And, you know, Andrea's in a tough place because she's hiding, but she has to kill these walkers at the same time. And the governor can hear this. So, you know, So it all leads up to the scene where after the governor has been terrorizing Andrea, like he almost finds her, like he's whistling this song that he used to whistle to Penny, I think. And it's just super creepy. He is out of his mind. But Andrea walks into this closet and there are just a stairwell full of walkers. And I'm like, oh my God, how is she going to get out?
I know. I thought she was done. And I was like, oh my God. The whole time I've been thinking Andrea's done this episode.
Yeah.
And then I did ask my husband, I was like, but she's in the comics still. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, all right. Well, anyway.
Yeah. But as a viewer, it's kind of like, wow. I mean, they got really creative with this. The writers got really creative because it's like, you know, if you're in that situation, you're Andrea, you could expect to just be dead because there's no way out of that. But what's great is that, at this point, the governor finally spots Andrea, and they look at each other eye to eye, and she kind of just gets this confident look in her eye, and she opens the door to where all the walkers are, and at first I was a little confused. I was like, how can she go in there? She's going to die. But what she does is she She opens the door, gets behind the door. The zombies see the governor, and then he's swarmed. He is swarmed by like 20 walkers. And it's like such an amazing fight sequence where he has to fight them all and she sneaks out.
And then, okay, did you not think that he was going to die, or did you think he was still going to be alive?
In a realistic zombie world, if there one existed,
he would have been dead, right?
Yeah, he would have been, but
so
of course.
Now we've given it away, Shannon, that so here's Andrea like walking and kind of like, oh my God, there's the prison, and she just about to like raise her hand and Rick is in the tower and probably will see her, but then boom, the governor grabs her from behind and just says, shh, you know, and he's still alive. He looks fine. He didn't get bit. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Is the governor that big of a warrior? Like I was like, he's going to run out of ammunition. Those walkers, there were so many walkers, so many. Yeah. And then part of me too was like, he's just not dead or we're not going to have a war, you know, you know, so I was kind of, there was a lot of moments that were really good in this episode. And then there were a lot of moments of like, are you kidding me? That just would not have happened. You know what I mean? Just like, I know that they were pushing to get these characters in a way. I know that they were pushing to get Andrea and the governor to have a confrontation, but there were so many like moments of unbelievable, like just because we've been conditioned, like these walkers are pretty fast and they're going to get you. And I don't know. I just didn't buy that the governor was still alive, but of course he was.
Yeah.
And why didn't she take his truck to the prison?
Exactly. That's what I was get in truck. I don't know, maybe he had the keys.
That's what that's the only thing is like maybe he had the keys still, but I don't know.
Man. I was so heartbroken though when the camera turned to Rick.
Mm-hmm.
He thought that he saw someone in the woods.
He totally did.
But then he kind of shook his head like, "Oh, shoot, I'm going crazy again." I think that's what we're meant to perceive from his facial expressions, that maybe he thought it was like him thinking of Lori or something. Like he didn't actually see what he saw, but yet Lori or Andrea is there being pinned down by the governor, and it's so bad. And so, and then I think at this point we skip back to Woodbury. The governor returns.
Oh yes, and then we forgot about the whole thing with the doctor and the burning bodies. Okay, so Tyrese and Sasha, I don't know, there's something with all these walkers in a pit, and I think that they want to bring all those walkers to the prison, right?
It's kind of like what they did before. Do you remember when the prison got attacked the first time? What they did was they sent an armored truck into the prison, and then they really opened the doors, and essentially there were like 20 walkers in there who were supposed to attack the people. So I think that they were doing this again.
And Tyrese was very much against it. He pretty much said, "What? No, you know, there's children over there. You know, you shouldn't do this." And so the leader of the governor's band was like, I don't know. He was just kind of confronting him. And the whole time, Tyrese was having issues with the other guy in his group, the guy who lost his wife. That guy is just like lost it. He's done. Mm-hmm. And so they fight in front of the pit, and there's just sort of a confrontation. And in the end, we see someone in a truck burn all of those at night, burn the walkers. And we're thinking, who was it?
I thought it was Milton.
You knew it was Milton the whole time? You knew
I didn't know if it was. I mean,
We still don't know, but it is. Yeah, come on, it has to be.
I believe it's Milton, but I thought it was him right away.
Okay. Because then there was some questions, because when the governor was questioning Tyrese about Andrea, you know, he's like, so where'd you get the gasoline?
He's like, what gasoline?
And then Tyrese is like, what? He's like, really, like, I don't know what you're talking about. And
then guy is way too skittish to have done it.
True.
He's trying to be accepted.
True. And then the governor goes out to see Andrea, and then to see Milton. And Milton's like, did you get her? And then what did he say? He's like, did he say no? He said no.
He said, correct. He said, no, I didn't find her.
Yeah. But and then Milton said, shame about those walkers, you know, about the fire or whatever.
The governor's like, oh, you know about that.
And it's sort of this conversation where they both know that they both know, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know. It was just really, really, really interesting.
And the governor just walks away. I think he has future plans for Milton, but he's not going to do it.
Thought he would, you know, first of all, it's like my gut instinct was like he's going to kill him on the spot. But then it's like it's out in the open, so he wouldn't do that in front of his people. So,
yeah.
And then should we just,
yeah,
you want to mention the end?
Because apparently he's got better things to do. And you can go ahead and say it, Eileen.
Well, that torture chamber that we had alluded to with Michonne, that's where Andrea is sitting.
Oh, no.
Nothing's wrong with her yet. She's just tied up. But
she's bound by the hands and feet into this chair.
Yeah.
And she's also got like a gag in her and a wrap around her face.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she is not in a good place. And what sucks is that nobody knows where she is.
Nobody knows she's alive. Yeah. She's
nobody's going to come to protect her because they don't know where she is. I mean, maybe the only one who could help her is probably Milton. But it's not like Rick knows where she is.
Yeah. Rick didn't even know, you know, she was like close to the.
So I think she's in a real bad place. I don't know how she's going to get out of this unless the prison camp comes into Woodbury to fight there. But
exactly.
We don't know yet. I'm just speculating at this point. But yeah, that was it. I mean, and then that was the end of the episode.
The end of the episode.
Oh my goodness.
I know. Yeah, it was very stressful. Very, very.
Can't wait
very
to watch it.
All right. So let's, we spent a lot of time. I love The Walking Dead. I just think it's one of the best shows on TV. But we do need to talk about being human. I have to admit, I kind of didn't finish the last episode, but I'm pretty much caught up. So I'll let you guys lead this one.
Well,
Shannon, you're caught
up,
right?
We're going to talk about through episode 8, right, Shannon?
Okay.
Yeah, episode 7
and 8.
So if
you're not caught up yet, that's totally cool.
Cool.
So we haven't watched episode 9 or 10. Well, I don't know if you guys have, but
I've watched 9, and I sort of watched 10, but 10 doesn't count because I needed... After I watched it, because I was kind of distracted, I felt like I needed to watch it again. But it was actually really good because 10 had flashbacks to Aiden's wife. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Cool. Yeah. I watched it. It was really good. You guys will like it, but we can save it for next time.
We'll talk about those next week.
Yeah.
So on episode 7, I believe where we left off was when Aiden was being attacked by Aaron, who was actually working for the father of the two original werewolves that had been killed by, you know, the three that we love. So he ended up knocking out Aaron, and then Aaron got put in the hospital, and Nora got completely mad at him during this episode. She was just off her rocker, angry at Aiden. But it's kind of funny because even though Nora was so angry at Aiden about attacking Aaron, even though she started it, nobody really knows that, Josh discussed it with Aiden, found out what really happened, and Josh is totally on Aiden's side during this. Which I thought was kind of weird because, you know, Nora and Josh are so in love and, you know, they didn't propose just yet. So speaking of which, Emily, who is Josh's sister, she gave Josh their grandmother's ring for a proposal because Josh asked her and Emily was completely happy about the whole thing. So, she gave him her grandmother's ring. He decided that he's going to propose to her, which he does in the, I believe the episode after that. What else happened in this episode? It was so long ago. It's hard to remember everything.
Yeah.
We also had Kenny, the little boy that's in the hospital. The bubble boy. He ended up meeting a vampire named Blake. Now, I'm still a little confused about how Blake ended up finding out about Kenny. She just kind of appeared and showed up in the hospital and started drinking his blood.
She was following Aiden because I think
following him.
Yeah, they were trying to figure out how he was surviving so long and like how he was so, you know, healthy and happy. And so I think she had followed him and figured out that he was feeding from a source at the hospital. So she had, she called herself Kenny's auntie.
Yes, she did.
Would get in to visit and talk with him and form a friendship with him. And she offered Kenny, the right of turning into a vampire when he turned 18. And he took it. Kenny wanted to do it. He's like, I'm in.
Kenny totally agreed. And he was super happy about the idea because he just wants to get out of the hospital. Well, eventually, I think Aiden feels kind of almost fatherly towards Kenny, and he doesn't want him to be sired by such a young, kind of crazy Blake vampire.
Yeah, Blake is 11 years old.
Yeah, so she's super young in the vampire world. So Aiden ends up blowing Blake's cover in the hospital, gets her basically kicked out by security. And then he says, okay, well, Kenny, if somebody has to turn you, I'll turn you. So he agrees to turn Kenny when he turns 18, which I was kind of happy about. I would much rather that happen than this crazy Blake person.
But that got ruined, right? Like, that whole plan got ruined because of Aaron.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe this is good. We can jump back to Aaron, like, which is why she got knocked out in the first place.
So what happened with Aaron?
The reason why Aiden can't follow through on his promise to Kenny is because he has now gotten the flu from Aaron's, he gets super sick. So because Aaron poisoned him.
Yeah.
So Aiden, and I'm sorry if this is the wrong episode, but Aiden goes to Kenny and says, you know, like, hey, I can't follow up on our deal because I'm sick and blah, blah, blah. It's a little bit weird dynamic between Aiden and Blake and Kenny, because now I guess Kenny still wants to go back to being a vampire with Blake.
Oh, no. And this stinks for Aiden, too, because, you know, not only is he sick, but he also just met this girl named Kat.
Really pretty, by the way.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. And he's, like, totally crazy about her. And he doesn't really know how to act whenever he's around her.
Oh, it's kind of so awkward.
He's totally awkward. And it's almost like
Kat is Nora's tenant, by the way.
That's right.
Nora's protective of Kat as well.
Yeah, she is. So, one more thing.
I forgot. I thought they were just friends. But they are, but that's how they. Okay, I get it now.
Yeah, Aiden sweeps Kat off her feet when he comes over to help her with plumbing, and then they talk about, like, the Renaissance or something.
Yeah, they talk about the history of one of the wars. I believe it was in America, and it was one that Aiden just happened to be in.
Yeah.
Way in the early, like, 1800 or 1900s. So, of course, Aiden had so much to tell Kat about it, and Kat is just obsessed with this historical aspect. So they had this great conversation about the war, and it was kind of cute, but it was totally one of those high school love stories almost, because it was just adorable and he was so awkward.
Yeah. And then when Kat brings, you know, a casserole to Josh and Nora at the hospital, because they're obviously taking care of Aaron, Nora sees Aiden and Kat together, and she's like, you know, like, the claws come out, and she's like, stay away from my friend. And that's where the kind of like the high school fun fun friendships come into place.
Yeah.
Like, stay away from Kat, or else I will, you know, my wolf will get you or something. Like, Nora's being, like, very, very possessive right now over her people.
Yeah, she seriously is. I think that's everything that's been going on with Aiden up to episode 8.
Sally?
Yeah, Sally, I still love her story. She has my favorite story. I don't know why, but I just love it. So,
really?
Sally. Yeah, it's kind of weird, I know.
Oh, wait, but you haven't. Okay, go ahead.
So, she ends up going outside one day, and she goes to find her old friend Bridget, because she had previously decided with the lady that brought her back to life that she can finally see her old friends and old family. So she goes and finds Bridget, who I believe was dating her ex in like the first season. So a long time ago. And it turns out Bridget has gotten into this big Wiccan coven. So Bridget invites her to go to the Wiccan coven with her, this Wiccan circle where they basically talk to the dead, and they try to, you know, talk to old, you know, husbands that have long gone and whatnot. Turns out there's a couple of these perverted ghosts that try to, you know, get into everybody. It's disgusting.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I actually thought this was super hilarious, because all of the girls, including Bridget, are like, they treat it as, like, oh, this is like a meditation, almost like how girls talk about yoga these days, you know?
Yeah, they
she's
do.
Like, yeah, I'm so relaxed and blah, blah, blah. And then Sally reveals to Bridget, she's like, the reason why you feel like nothing is going on in your head and that you're meditating is because you've been possessed. And Bridget's just kind of like jaw dropped. It's just like, what? So I thought that was pretty darn funny. So Sally ends up, you know, this leads into the situation where Sally protects Bridget by giving her that little pendant, like a necklace. I think, Shannon, you call it a spirit lock.
Yeah, that's what I read in the on the sci-fi website. It's called the spirit lock pendant, which is how Sally can protect herself from being taken over by any spirits. So she ends up giving that to Bridget. She tells her, don't go to any more meetings, and then Sally goes home. And at the end of episode 7, we get this surprise when Sally's brushing her hair and ends up falling out, and she gets these ugly, gross-looking, like, sores all over her head wherever she's brushing her hair and it's falling out. And she freaks out. She, like, screams at the end of the episode. And then it goes black. The end. It was so scary.
These sores and this... I mean, we figure out that Sally is decomposing. And I think that this is the next episode that is it's super gross, but also super funny the way that it happens. I mean, if it's okay to just kind of skip ahead to point where Sally is getting all messed up. She has this scene with Aiden, and Aiden says, like, oh, man, something stinks. And she smells her breath. And she's like, oh, God, it's me. So she brushes her teeth like nuts. She's like, oh, man, I got to get this plaque out of my mouth, whatever. And then her toothbrush goes straight through her cheek.
Ugh, yeah, and that was so gross.
And so she has to wear this big bandage on her face and along with, like, this head wrap because she's freaking decomposing. It's sad and gross, but I thought it was pretty funny.
It was really funny, yeah. It was like, oh my God, that's disgusting. But then you're like, oh, yeah, well, you're kind of turning into a zombie now.
Yeah. So you caught that I referred to Aiden. Shannon, did you want to tell the listeners what happened to Aiden in this episode? Or, like, what happened with his sickness?
I don't remember exactly. Oh, you go ahead.
Oh. Hold on.
He drinks the vial of blood. This is the episode before, right? Or... are we talking about that? Where he drinks the vial of blood, he gets sick. But the vial of blood is filled with what's-her-face's blood. Werewolf blood, which makes him really sick.
Yeah, so he gets the virus. I remember that part.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I think I may have, like, skipped ahead.
It's been so long, I know.
Yeah, but essentially, maybe we should talk about Liam, because Liam plays a central role to everything that's happening with Aaron in the hospital and Aiden being sick.
Oh, yeah. Go for
it. So, yeah, like, essentially, Liam is the one behind Aiden getting sick, and the reason why Aiden and Aaron fought is because he essentially brainwashed Aaron when she ran away to say, like, hey, you have to kill Aiden for me. This is what
that's right.
Says. Yeah, she's like, this is what my family does. And so, anyway, now Liam is trying to play the nice guy and to everybody, except he sneaks into the hospital, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. He kills Aaron.
Yeah, he kills Aaron. I was really surprised when he did that. He essentially said something to Aaron like, oh, you know, you have served the duty of your wolf family. And he puts a pillow over her head. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was so messed up.
Yeah, and then
he's not happy.
Yeah, I thought he was gonna stop there, but no, he goes and he kind of stalks Aiden now.
That's right. He found Aiden while Aiden and Kat were at the college discussing, you know, old war stories, and he ends up getting Aiden out to I guess you could call it Liam's, like, country cottage or something. It's out in the middle of nowhere, his house, and he tortures him. And he injects Aiden with the virus, with blood that has the virus in it.
Yeah, so that's where I got confused. I'm sorry, I mixed it up.
That's okay. It's a lot going on, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that he got sick from drinking Aaron's blood, but it turns out that even when he got better, he still got the virus from Liam, who injected him. And in the midst, I guess we should jump to the big fight scene, because Josh, poor Josh, such a good friend. Little human Josh came and tried to save Aiden. He fought. I think he shot Liam with, I don't know if it was like wooden pellets or whatever, some sort of gun.
Mm-hmm.
He shot him, but he didn't kill Liam. And so while Liam was injured and in wolf form, Josh takes a sledgehammer or whatever and gets poor Aiden, who's beaten bloody out of there. But in the process, Josh gets scratched.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Josh gets scratched. They both go home, and then Sally's there, and they end up telling Sally about the fact that Josh is going to turn again at the next moon. Uh-oh. And that's how episode 8 ended. But there were a couple of other things that happened during episode 8 as well. With Sally, she ended up talking to Nick. Nick is the guy who's been dating that nurse who used to work in the ward with the babies.
He walked through the door from the death side to human side along with Sally. It was like her and the other young kid.
Nick and the little boy.
Guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So Nick's alive too. He's been dating the nurse girl. And it turns out that Nick has been having these sores too, but he doesn't tell Sally. It turns out that he's been eating cats to get rid of the sores.
Oh my God.
Apparently
that was unexpected.
Raw food to get rid of these sores. And at that point I was like, oh my God, Sally's turning into a zombie. That's exactly what happens. So at the end of that episode, she just grabs some raw beef out of the fridge and just goes to town on it, and she loves it.
You know,
gross.
She's just so hungry. So I think that's the end of the episode. And just as a teaser, Shannon, in the next episode, her hunger pains continue.
Oh no.
And you know, she eventually, like, I mean, it's no secret that what she has to do is eat live animals. So she's like walking around, looking at the pet store, salivating.
And oh then, God, that's so gross.
And then a little child comes out of the store. She looks at the child and she's like, oh crap, I want to eat the child. And she runs away. And now she has something to bond
with. Yeah, because she was looking at all the animals too, the puppies and stuff. I was like, oh God.
Yeah. It was a great scene though. I thought it was, again, scary and gross, but also just funny. Because she wants to eat little children, and she can bond with Aiden now, who can kind of like, I don't know, coach her into like how to not do that. So interesting.
Oh, and then my favorite part of the episode, Josh proposes to Nora.
Oh, that's right.
Finally.
In the house that they don't own.
In the house that they don't own. And then they ran upstairs and did who knows what.
Uh-huh. Oh, they're so cute.
It was so adorable.
Well, I can't wait for you to catch up. Lots of good stuff happens, especially around your favorite storyline with Sally.
Me too. Yeah. I'm really liking Sally's storyline. I wasn't expecting the whole sores thing to go like this.
Oh, it
gets worse. I wasn't expecting it at all, but I'm kind of worried that she's going to end up killing somebody and eating them.
Well, you definitely need to catch up.
Do you think Josh is going to, or not Josh, Aiden's going to survive the virus?
Well, I know if he does or not. You're just
gonna... Yeah, I know. I do too.
Well, I guess he does.
Let's just say the show wouldn't be the same without Aiden. So.
I know. And I gave you the spoiler that we get to see flashbacks of Aiden's wife and his life, you know, back in the 1700s. So I don't know. I guess anything could happen in a story, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's not that huge of a spoiler. Like, when someone is sick, they obviously think about, reflect upon their life. And in Aiden's case, he thinks about his wife.
True, true. Anyway, well, cool. I think it's time for us to... We'll revisit being human, because, those Sally's urges to eat just get crazier, and so do and her other ghost friends as well. It just all gets insane. It's actually I really like the storyline too, even though it's gross. So let's move on to The Vampire Diaries season 4 episode 15 and 16. Am I right about that? Bring it on and because
I think it's 14 and 15.
14
sorry.
And 15. Yeah. Bring it on and because the show. Okay, so in the Bring It On episode that alludes to the, was it early 2000, early 90s, funny comedy, Bring It On, the cheerleading.
Oh, yeah.
I used to love that with Kirsten Dunst. Yeah, I love that that movie back in the day. Anyway, so Elena has turned off her emotions. she wants to get back into her routine of going to school. And so Caroline's like, oh, I think that's a good idea. Even though Stefan's a little, I don't know.
Damon still thinks that he has a sire bond over her. So he's like, hey, it would make me so happy if you went back to school. But it would also make me real happy if you just didn't kill anyone.
Right.
And she's like, okay.
Okay, I'll do whatever you say, Damon.
Sure. Yeah.
And meanwhile, the bond has been broken when she turns off the emotional switch. And so she says, well, can you get me back on the cheerleading squad? And Caroline's like, oh, okay, sure. Caroline's like, great, this is awesome. Okay. And so Elena joins the squad. First day back, they have a competition. She kills a cheerleader, grabs the blue ribbon from her hair that she wanted. She killed the cheerleader on the bus secretly. And then they do the routine, and Elena totally drops Caroline in front of everyone, so they're all going to lose. It's like juvenile. It's like Catherine, but in a juvenile state. Right? Mm-hmm. And it's
really, she's so childlike.
She's so annoying in a different way this time. It's like the varying degrees of annoying Elena this season. But that's part of her growth, right? And she's changed into a vampire. So she's not going to be, the old Elena's dead. And now let's see how this Elena kind of progresses.
Yeah.
So now she's just kind of a child.
And she's attacking the people that love her most, like Caroline. I think she especially attacks Caroline by letting her, drop on the floor in front of the entire public. She does that because Caroline's trying to teach Elena and try to restrain her.
Mm-hmm.
And so Elena is essentially rebelling against Caroline. And so afterwards, the person who takes a crack at taming Elena since Caroline is out is Stefan. And I just have to mention this scene where he's talking to her in front of the lockers, and she's kind of like, I don't care what I did, whatever. And Stefan says, hey, I've been the Ripper. I know what it's like to do bad things, and you're going to have to live with it, and blah, blah, blah. He's essentially trying to talk some sense into her, and it's not working. And I just thought it was so funny. She does, while they're having this conversation, she's like, okay, we can talk as long as you help me stretch. And she puts her long leg, straight up over his shoulder. And he kind of pauses and he looks at her leg. And it's, super uncomfortable because they're exes. And I just thought it was so funny. Because Elena's becoming really, I don't want to say manipulative, but she works it.
She kind of is, though. And we'll talk about that in the next episode.
Yeah.
But anyway.
She knows that Stefan kind of loves her still.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of flaunting it at this point. There was a scene in the beginning, even before she went to school, where she was walking around the Salvatore house. And the reason why everyone was there, it was Damon, Stefan, Caroline in a bathrobe. Because it's the only house that doesn't have vervain in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Elena just walks around naked.
Yeah.
It was so funny. And she says a statement to all the jaw-dropped guys who are looking at her. And she's like, what? It's nothing you haven't seen before. Oh, my gosh. And then Stefan gives Damon a look like, oh, you did my girl.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was hilarious.
I kind of like Elena like this.
Oh, she's entertaining, if anything.
She is.
Yeah. So what else happens this episode?
Remember Klaus and the werewolf girl? They get it on because he's trying to get information out of her. She wants to get information out of him. Seems like he knows more information about her family, but in the end, they do it on the table.
They're like, let's hook up because we're bored.
And I think that's kind of important in terms of Klaus sort of getting over Caroline a little bit, or at least having a diversion from, pining after her, if that makes sense, for the next episode. So that's kind of going on. And then Damon and Rebecca I'm trying to remember exactly what happens here with them.
I think Rebecca, I don't remember Rebecca much in this episode, and I think it's because she's still, lost in the woods.
Okay.
I don't think that she... Gosh, from what I remember, she doesn't show up until the next episode.
Okay.
Because we're surprised to see her,
So, at the end of the episode, Damon decides to take Elena to New York. And
that's because he found he ran into Will.
Right. His buddy who just died. Didn't he die? Yeah, he died.
Yeah, and, because Klaus bit him or something.
Right.
Somebody bit him.
And Will has some information on Catherine. So that's why he wants to go to New York and takes Elena with him just, you know, to babysit and,
you know, he wants to booze her up and feed her. And while she is distracted, he's going to do his business looking for the cure and for Catherine.
Exactly. So she, you know, gets red highlights in her hair, has a new haircut.
She looks cute.
And then we also have some flashbacks to 1970. And in fact, that's how the whole episode starts, is with, you know, Damon killing a couple on the streets of New York. 1977, yeah.
He plays dead by laying on the sidewalk, and they're like, "Ooh, are you okay? Are you alive?" And then he eats them both, and he's like, "Whatevs, I'm going to go to the club now and eat more people."
Yeah. So he goes to Billy's, his friend William's club. He's like, because the other clubs are just, whatever. But this is just, you know, much better. So then we have flashbacks of Lexi coming into play in 1970. Yay, Lexi's back.
Yeah, and she was sent by Stefan because Damon's antics are making waves. Like, everyone's hearing about him acting out.
Right.
While his emotions are turned off.
Right, because he just eats people on the dance floor. I'm like, how does that happen without people? But then, okay, anyway, he just, like, eats them while they're dancing in a crowded room, and I guess no one sees the blood getting sucked, and everyone's that drunk and high and whatever that they wouldn't notice.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Or nobody cares? I don't know. Weird.
Or they think people are making out.
Yeah, they probably just think that they're having some kind of strange makeout session.
I guess so. That just, I don't know. Because at one point, so we do flashbacks with that happening, with Lexi and Damon, you know, sort of eating someone on the dance floor. And then the same thing happens with Damon and Elena, you know, in the present day, and then Rebecca. And at some point, you know, Elena kind of looks up and there's blood all over her mouth. Like, no one would see that in the club. I don't know about that. Sometimes there's just some stuff that I'm like, come on. There would be like one or two sober people in that club and it'd be like, what's happening? Anyway.
Yeah. Whatever. So speaking of Rebecca, gosh, she like just shows up randomly. Like, she kind of assaults Damon. While he's having a little like nostalgic moment at Billy's, and she's like, "Oh, I'm disappointed you left me there." And what's funny is that she gets along amazingly well with Elena now that Elena's a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, Elena, while Damon is away, you know, it's obvious that Elena's not dumb. She knows that she's been brought there because Damon wants to find the cure, and he's just kind of babysitting her. She knows that. She has this conversation with Rebecca saying, you know, like, hey, I know that Damon wants to get this cure, and I know that he's going to try to force it on me. So what I'm going to do is try to find the cure first. And then Rebecca's impressed. She's like, oh, there she is. This non-moral Elena is so much better. And she's like, yeah, let's team up. And Elena outright rejects Rebecca. She's like, oh, you're driven by emotion. You want to have babies. And I just don't need that in my life. Oh, and it was so funny seeing Elena burn Rebecca, because all Rebecca could say is like, you just made me miss the old Elena, the one with the morals.
Yeah.
Oh, it was hilarious. So there are some great scenes with Rebecca. Essentially, Elena and Rebecca split up, and this is a very minor scene, but there is a specific moment where Elena walks to the roof with Damon, looks back at Rebecca, and Rebecca gets hit on by some club guy. She just knocks his head into the floor. It's like, oh, excuse me. I don't know. I just thought it was so funny.
It was.
Yeah, Rebecca's totally great in this episode.
And nobody really minds that she just knocks somebody over like that. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, that's normal.
Yeah, she's just some badass chick, I guess.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Gosh, which way do we want to turn, girls? Do we want to turn to the rooftop of what Elena's doing, or do we want to finish up the flashbacks?
Well, let's just mention that while Elena and Rebecca are having this conversation, Damon has left and gone up to Billy's office.
True.
And is looking at files, and he's talking to Stefan, so, you know, Stefan's getting updated as to what's happening in New York. But he's like, look, I'm looking for some here we go. And then he finds some information on Catherine with Stefan's help, because Stefan knows when Catherine was born, needed the the date of her birth, and you know where Damon says, "Well, you're the better boyfriend for knowing
her information,
yeah. Birthday." And so he finds this piece of paper that'll help him lead them to Catherine. And so then he goes back. Then they go back up on the roof. Well, he goes back out to, or no, Elena comes in and finds Damon in there, and then they.
Oh, and this is where Elena gets real manipulative. It's because she is listening to Damon talk about Lexi back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And just as a, you know, sidebar, the story is that Lexi was spending a lot of quality time with Damon because she cares about him. She wants to fix him. And, you know, he talked about turning his emotions back on as soon as he told Lexi that he was, like, in love with her or something, or he cared about her.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where we get snapped back into the present day. And Elena's like, "Ooh, tell me more on the rooftop, because that's where you and Lexi did it, you know."
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird. But yeah, they go to the rooftop, and this is where Elena gets real manipulative and like, "Oh, you know, I'm not sorry to you. You want this? I want this. Let's do it. Let's do this thing." And while they're making out, Elena reaches into Damon's back pocket and tries to pull out the information that he got from Billy's office. She is unsuccessful.
Of course she is.
But. Go ahead. You can
talk. Oh, but good old Rebecca, her new buddy, helps this whole situation out by snapping Damon's neck just for a brief second. Damon will be fine. We all know that. And grabs a piece of paper.
And they give each other this like cute little like friendship lady smile. Like, "Oh, you know you couldn't do it alone. I got your back. I'm your girl." Like, they just give each other this sweet, sweet, sickening smile. It's so funny. I love it. Yeah, and they just essentially just leave Damon up there. And it's great.
Okay.
Ooh, speaking of the rooftop, I guess we should kind of, like, round out the story with Lexi. The last scene kind of ties back to the rooftop because Lexi and Damon are assumed to have slept with each other on the rooftop under the stars, like an amazing, you know, thing. And then Lexi gets up because the sun has come up and she does not have a ring. So she must find the shade. And we find out that Damon wakes up and is like, "Oh, hey, you know, enjoy bacon in the sun. Because, you know, I'm leaving you." And she realizes that he has not turned on his emotions. He is just being super evil. He pretended to love her just to get rid of her. And he, like, had hate sex with her. He was mad at her for trying to fix him for 6 months. And he doesn't want to be fixed. So that was 6 months of his life that he can't get back. Which is super evil. I thought that was real mean. But, you know, we figure out that's why, part of why he killed Lexi. She is a walking, talking reminder of all the guilt that he had when he had his emotions off. Because, you know...
Poor Lexi.
Huh?
Poor Lexi.
Oh, I know. I mean, she was just, like, a real victim in this. Because Damon was trying to explain to Elena that, you know, once her emotions turn back on, all of the things that she's done are going to... Like, all that guilt is going to come rushing.
Everything comes back.
And she might not be able to stand it. And what he's saying is that he could barely stand it, and in turn, he killed Lexi. That's part of it. So that's that. And I don't know. I mean, I guess we could just say, like, the end of that story is Elena and Rebecca jump into Damon's car, give Damon a ring on the phone saying, like, "Hey, got your car. We're going to go find Catherine. Woo, girl trip."
Whoop, whoop.
Yep. And they drive off very aggressively into the sunset.
We should briefly talk about Caroline and Bonnie and the witches and things like that. Because Silas is...
A.K.A. Professor Shane.
Yeah, has been Shane the whole time. And so the professor's been dead in that cave or wherever they were, you know, this entire time. Silas is alive, and everybody, you know, I think Stefan and Klaus, everybody's kind of figured it out who Silas is. In the meantime, Silas is still manipulating Bonnie and taking hold of Bonnie, And what Silas needs in order to resurrect all the supernaturals and to get all his needs is a third massacre. So the first one was when all those people died in the house.
Humans.
The humans. In the fire that April's dad started. And then the second one was...
Supernaturals. The hybrids.
The hybrids, yes, when they all died. And then... the third one we presume is going to be a bunch of witches at this mm-hmm. point.
And we figure that out from Caroline, Stefan, and Klaus digging around in the books in Professor Silas's office.
So Silas has been, you know, quote unquote working with Bonnie this whole time. And the dad knows it. And, but the dad's starting to become suspicious, thank God, a little too late. In the end, Silas pretty much encourages Bonnie that he needs all the witches. And so she asks her dad to start with her mom, who basically calls friends of her mom when, you know, or the mom ends up calling all her old, or one of the old friends who ends up calling 12 other witches. At this point in the woods, when Bonnie goes out to see this witch and this other and the entire coven, I kind of was like, oh, well, these guys are all dead. Yeah, I figured as much. They meet in the woods. There's a certain area on the map that they need to meet in order for this massacre to happen. And then Bonnie says, you know, I want you to spell out, get Silas out of me. But that's not really kind of, it's sort of it's a total trick. Yeah,
it's a trap.
So, you know, in the meantime, Klaus and Bonnie are trying to figure out where they're at, and they figure in a triangle. It's one of these two places. They go to one place. Nobody's there. They go to the second place. And Stefan shows up before them and tells the main witch, you know, this is a trick. You know, Silas is manipulating Bonnie. And so that witch wants to kill Bonnie because knowing that, like, she needs to kill him in order for all of this to stop. And then Stefan tries to stop. And so the witch, you know, has more power than Stefan. And Stefan's like pushed back. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden Klaus and Caroline come onto the scene. And just about when the witch was about to kill Bonnie, Caroline kills that witch. Klaus says no. And then boom, all the other witches in the coven just start dropping. Hence, the massacre has happened.
And then Bonnie opens her eyes, her white eyes, and says, "The triangle is complete."
Yeah. So how are you feeling at this point? When I mean, I'm kind of conflicted because I kind of feel like, I would want to save my best friend, but you know, as Klaus said, he's like, "Well, you just opened it up for all the old supernaturals mm-hmm. to come back. Like, who are we going to see?
Whoops.
You know, we're going to see everybody. A ton of people. Like, this is great. Now we get to see all the dead supernaturals, all right?
I mean, Jeremy's coming back and Alaric. No, Alaric's not
coming
back. Was
Jeremy counted as a supernatural?
Yeah, because he's one of the five.
Yeah, okay. He's a hunter, yeah.
His
yeah.
ring didn't work because he's a supernatural as a hunter.
Okay.
And then Anna could come back and who did we like?
Lexi.
Lexi could come back. And what about what's his face? Tyler's cousin, the werewolf who died.
Uncle Mason.
Uncle Mason.
He's not doing anything now. he's not in any other TV shows.
I gotta say, I am excited. Well, wouldn't all these witches come back? Aren't they
let's
bring them all. We're gonna have this. What is gonna happen, you guys? I don't understand what's gonna happen. Maybe I'm misunderstanding Silas's real plan, but yeah. I'm like,
I'm not sure. But you know what I enjoy about this outcome, not necessarily, maybe enjoy is the wrong word, but we get to see Caroline kind of have to eat her own words,
mm-hmm.
because throughout Walking the Witch, she's like chastising Klaus for being such a terrible person, kills people, and then she realizes, oh my God, I just killed 12 people.
Yes.
A wave of guilt comes over her, and Klaus steps up to her very tenderly, and he, you know, almost has his nose like pretty much against hers, and he's like, "Caroline, honey, it's gonna be okay. You look like you're in need of some comfort." And I think that
she's like, "Yeah."
She's like, "Yeah, I do." And there's this great, great quote. He says, very coldly, "Why don't you find someone less terrible that you can relate to?" Oh, Fern, and she kind of stomps off.
I feel like Klaus did that because he was pissed, but then I think he was a little bit remorseful from saying that because he does have feelings for Caroline. But I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta say, I might have said the same thing as Klaus.
But it was hilarious. But you know, it's a good thing that Caroline stomped off. Because immediately Silas shows up.
That's true. And they converse. And okay, so remind me what happened in the scene again. It was just sort of like.
Oh, it was like a pissing. Yeah, it was like a pissing conversation.
Yeah, okay.
He's like, "Oh, I'm not scared of you," and I don't know. Essentially, Silas. He needs Klaus to do something. I don't remember what he needs Klaus to do, but he stakes him with the white oak.
Oh, yes. He's like, you have to do this for me or what? And then, you know, the white oak is, he's got a portion of the white oak and leaves a little bit of it in him. Not enough to kill him, but, you know, just, hey, do what I say.
Yeah. And so he's just like, at this point, Klaus is just writhing in the woods while Silas just goes on to do his business. I'm not sure what his next step is. I kind of forgot. Apparently one of the questions was, where did Silas get this white oak? And apparently he says that Rebecca's mind is really easy to read. So I guess he just got kind of close to her and figured out where it was and stole it before she went to New York. How convenient.
Very convenient. Very, very convenient. So next week we get to see Catherine and the new Elena, with Rebecca confronted, and seems like there's this fight and a struggle. This should be really interesting. I feel like the whole time Catherine's known what's going on. I think she's going to expect them, or even if she's surprised, she would have already thought about this. Like, okay, so if Elena comes and confronts me or blah, 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 if they know, if someone comes to find me because they find me, they know how to find me and I have the cure, what do I do? Like, I feel like she's already a step ahead. Don't you think?
Yeah, probably.
I don't. And it's so weird, but I'm kind of rooting for Catherine at this point. But just because I haven't seen her in so long, I'm like, let's have some fun with this, you know? Like, don't, you know... I don't want Catherine to go away. She can just either get tripped up or whatever, but I hope, you know, she's still in play as like a character. You know what I mean? Like, but I just feel like she's anticipating all, you know, it's her move. So it's like, she's anticipating everything. What is her end game is obviously not good. It never is, but, she essentially, because she has a cure, she holds all the cards. And she's waiting for someone to catch up with her is what I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. She's always one step ahead. And I think that she has some kind of plan. And she's just, she's just waiting right now until that plan falls into place.
Mm-hmm. What do you think she wants? Do you think she wants to be with... I can't imagine what the thing that she wants would be.
Kill Klaus?
Kill Klaus, maybe.
She might be using it as a bargaining chip against Klaus because that's the whole reason why she's on the run.
Got it. Okay.
Because it's kind of like what Tyler's situation is right now. She has to keep running from him. So maybe if she gave it to Klaus, that would be her ticket to freedom.
Maybe.
But do you think that he'd really give her that freedom? I don't know.
No. He didn't give Tyler that freedom.
Why doesn't she just run away and live in Argentina or something? You know what I mean? Like, be
far. Well, I mean, she is running.
But she always seems to be close. You know, like, why is she, and then, like, this whole thing with Damon finding her, like, possibly where she would be. Like, she's obviously still in the United States if Elena and Rebecca catch up with her. Like, if I were Catherine, I'd just be, like, gone. Like, I'm going to go to Australia for a while. I'm going to go to, I don't know. I mean, like, really run? But I don't think she really runs. I feel like she's always looking in. She's kind of always around. Right? No?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe she's just very fast.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, vampires don't like to be lonely also. I mean, maybe it's just that she always has a fond place for the Salvatore brothers. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out, like, why she doesn't leave. And maybe it's because she doesn't know anybody else. I don't know. Maybe she has no friends. Not sure.
Well, I think that's true. She has no friends. She just manipulates people.
Yeah, because it sounds like, you know, like, I mean, vampires, whether they're, you know, alive or human, like they, alive or not, they don't want to be alone. And maybe as badass as she may be, there she sticks around for a reason. I don't know. I think she wants her freedom.
Well, next episode, also, besides Catherine, who I believe we see, Elijah is back somehow. And I don't know why, but, you know, maybe... should I read the description of the episode?
Yeah.
Okay. So the episode is American Gothic, and it's a race for the cure. Elena and Rebecca take off in search of Catherine and find themselves in a small town in Pennsylvania where Elena has a surprising encounter with another old acquaintance, Elijah. Stefan and Damon are both concerned about Elena's state of mind and are determined to do what's best for her, but she makes it clear that helping her will be difficult. Surprise. Damon is not sure how to react when Stefan reveals his unexpected plan for the future. Whoa. Meanwhile, in Mystic Falls, Klaus receives Caroline's reluctant help and comes to a new understanding of Silas's powers. Okay, so Elijah could... be the key to maybe helping Elena. I don't know.
Could be. And he's always been a voice of reason.
Yes. And Damon is not sure how to react when Stefan reveals his unexpected plan for the future. What would that be?
I don't
be?
Know what that means.
That's weird. Sure, like, all I know is that Stefan wants to be human, right? He's wanted to, he just doesn't want to be a vampire anymore. Why
that
would
that be his plan if he doesn't have the cure?
True.
So, I don't know what he's talking about. He's just being crazy. I don't know.
So, I'm excited to see Elijah next week.
Me too. I heard a rumor.
Yeah?
That Elijah and Elena are going to make out, which is going to be really weird.
Well, Elijah has always had feelings for Katarina.
True.
From back in the day. And I think, you know, when he met Elena, remember, they kind of bonded a little bit, right? They started to become friends. Remember when we thought Elijah was such a bad person? And he kind of was. Mm-hmm. But then, I don't know, out of all of the originals,
he's the most reasonable.
I know. He turns out to be the least, you know, controversial, I guess.
Yeah.
Especially after meeting Klaus. So, and then what's all this business with the originals having their own possible series? We talked about this before, right?
Yeah, on the 25th of April is actually their pilot, and it's going to take place of a Vampire Diaries episode.
So is Elijah involved? Or...
Yeah.
Oh, so excited.
I can tell you who the cast is.
Yeah, tell me.
So the official cast is Elijah, Klaus, and Rebecca, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And... Phoebe Tonkin, who plays Haley.
Ah, okay.
Regular.
Hence having the Klaus and and what's-her-face relationship start. Okay.
Yeah. So it's the four of them. I mean, of course, they have a whole bunch of other supporting characters that are coming from other
the
places.
Ones.
But yeah, those are the core.
So,
and yeah.
So I guess if the original storyline takes off on its own vein, then Vampire Diaries is going to change because, you know, the originals have been embedded in their story for so long. So if you rip them out because they're going to have their own show, the show itself is going to turn, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a little weird without those three. But, you know, they're not saying... I mean, I'm sure that there will be some crossover. I mean, you can't exactly just rip them apart and never have them see each other again, you know? Like, I heard that Damon is going to be... you know, having some appearances on the originals and here and there, but I'm sure there will be crossovers. I don't see why they wouldn't.
I'm actually really excited for that show if it happens. I'm starting to really like all the characters, even though you're not supposed to, which is, you know, like every once in a while, like, oh, I actually sided with Klaus and his hurt feelings against Caroline this time, you know, like I shouldn't. Klaus is despicable. But they all have some sort of, they all have like a percentage, like even if it's 0.1% of humanity in them, you know, even though they're so far gone in their, I mean, you know, when Klaus paints and that's his release, his therapy. I'm like, oh, look at that.
And when Haley was saying like his paintings were all mediocre. In that scene before they slept together,
yes.
He was like really hating on his artwork. It was funny.
And then, Oh, and then when Klaus and Caroline were walking in the woods and they were using the phone map, and she's like, "Do you know how to use a map?" He's like, "Yes, I learned from my old friend Magellan." You know, I'm like, okay. Anyway, I really like the originals, and I hope a show like theirs could work. I think they have enough interest. I mean, I don't know. My guess is yes, it would work, but it just would be weird to see them ripped out. But you just can't keep forging this like conflict with the originals and Mystic Falls anymore. Like, I just feel like at some point it needs to end. Mm-hmm. So that's a great diversion, is to have their own show, right?
Yeah.
I'd watch it.
I would watch it too.
I will watch it.
Yes. Watch that pilot. Great. Support it. Yay.
Cool.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's the end of this episode of Bike Club Show. Do we want to answer some? There's a couple of, do you want to address some of the comments in our blog, Stephanie?
Yeah. Well, we had some great comments on our last episode on the blog. And a few of you wanted to make some predictions on who should take the cure. I mean, this is still valid because they haven't found the cure yet. And let's see, I'm trying to look up the results. But last time I checked. I voted for Rebecca. I want Rebecca to have the cure because I think that she just, you know, out of all the people, she has the most legit reason to, I guess. She's never had all these human experiences, and, you know, it, obviously she still wants it. Even as one of the oldest vampires, she wants a cure. So I thought she should have it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Elena doesn't even want it. While I look for it, who do you guys think should have the cure?
I think Rebecca's a good choice. I mean, she definitely misses being human. She wants to have, you know, a whole family and everything, and that's something that I feel bad that she never got that, and that she misses it so much. And that's the whole reason why she's such an angry person. So
yeah,
Rebecca's a good choice.
What about you, Eileen?
I'm not going to say it's Rebecca because she's going to have a new show. So I'm playing the whole, like,
she might be the human. I don't know. Maybe they have to protect her. Maybe she's going to be the, you know, what Elena was in the Vampire Diaries in the beginning.
I think it's going to be a Salvatore brother. Uh-huh. I just don't know which one. I'm not going to pick between the two of them, but I'm going to go with one of the two.
You did hear the spoiler from the books, which may or may not be reflected.
I know. I think I'm going with the books there, but it's probably not going to happen. So.
Cool. Well, I found the poll. There were 5 people who voted for Rebecca, including myself, Bianca, Tony, Naratip, and Chris. But the next highest vote was for no one. They want nobody to have the cure. They want it to just disappear.
Ooh, nice.
As is. And the one person, Pops, Kylan, wants Damon to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody voted for anybody else.
But you know, once you have the cure, you could still turn back.
True.
So maybe there's a little bit of whoever, Rebecca or Damon, they go through life as a human for a little bit, and then all of a sudden they just get bit.
In that case, I hope it's Damon, because then he needs a little, like, I don't know. He just loves being a vampire, and I would love for Damon to be a human, granted that he would turn back into a vampire later. I think it would be really interesting. But, you know, if it was just one and it's done with, I still choose Rebecca.
Hmm. Yeah, so I think even if any of them turn into human, they can come back to being a supernatural, which something happens at being human, which I won't spoil. Because we didn't talk about that, did we?
Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about.
Okay, so.
Shannon will know soon.
Yes. So, all right, well, cool. Well, thanks everybody for writing in. I know a lot of you guys want us to review the Blu-ray or the DVD of Breaking Dawn. I have to purchase it, so I'll try to do that so we could kind of check out the extras. You guys have it already?
I have it. I rewatched the movie and it was great, but I'm sorry, I didn't have time to look at all the extras.
Yeah, maybe I'll.
I don't have it yet.
Okay. Maybe I'll
better round out the collection. I mean, I think there was a question of whether one should buy it, and, you know, I think it's the last movie. You know, if you have a collection, if you have the other movies, I would do it.
This, yeah.
I mean, why the heck not round out your collection?
Totally.
Get a set. That's what I did.
Yeah, totally. All right, guys. Well, I think that does, now it finally does it for this episode of Bike Club Show. We had a lot to talk about, but I'm glad we caught up. And until next time,
bye.